The alligator snapping turtle is one of the greatest turtles, the largest turtles that you'll find in the swamp here. And probably there's a lot of people that don't know, but he carries his bait right along with him. When he gets hungry, he goes down to the bottom of the waterways, he opens his mouth, he's got a cut-off valve, and then right in the bottom part of his mouth, he has a little, looks just like a little worm, it's about an inch and a half long, and right in the middle of it, it's growed down just like the good Lord made it. But it's looked like where you took a needle and thread and tied it down. And when he gets hungry, he just opens his mouth and wiggles the worm back and forth. Of course, he'd be in the bottom of the water, down in the bottom of the swamp here. The fish will strike at it and think it's something for him to eat, so he grabs a fish. And that's the way the alligator snapping turtle, makes his living here in the swamps. Have the horn owl, the great horn owl, about 2 hours after the sun gets up, about 2 hours, you still see them sitting in the trees. But then they back them back out a lot of times to get in higher trees, you know, where they can watch you, see what's going on.
After what I'd seen of the Okefenokee, I wondered if it wasn't pretty easy for somebody to get lost in there.
No, I hadn't exactly been lost. I have been quite confused sometimes. There's some places in there that you look back at, you've already passed it a time or two when you're going through the swamp there, but a lot of places looks very much alike. It would be easy for someone to get lost in the swamp that wasn't used to it.
If a person was out in the swamp and he, just as quick as he finds that he's lost, if he'd sit down and be plumb quiet and rest there for an hour or two, it would all come back to him. But most of them just dashes running round and round. They get upset and they go plumb crazy. We had a man lost in the swamp and all head out to hunt this man. They each one take a gun. If you found the man that found him, you hear his gun shoot one time and wait about a minute and shoot again. And if it waited about a minute and shoot one more time, you'd know they found him. Everybody'd close up and go to him.
And so in traveling through the swamps here, a lot of times you can tell where the boat, whether it's a boat or an alligator or a bear. These old swampers, they travel the swamp so many times, so they notice such stuff as that. And if it's a boat, well, the markings will be a little bit wider. You find the grass pushed over to the side, and the lily pads, they pushed over. And usually, after he works in the swamp here, a guy that really knows his way around, well, he can tell you about how many hours that boat is ahead of him. If the boat's been gone for 4 or 5 hours, well, the lily pad will be falling back, and the grass will be kind of straightening back up. But a real old-timey swamper, he really knows his markings in the swamps. And he's hard to fool.
You have signals all through there. A lot of people, the way I always travel was by the timber and by these old eagle nests and places like that. And then we have on pine sapling, on the sapling prairie, you got an old pine tree that grows there that all of the old timers, you can be telling them anything about the swamps they went by the old pine sapling, he knows exactly where you was at. Another thing, you watch the water. You can tell by the water the way your water's moving. You can tell, any man most can tell, all that water moves towards Suwannee River.
Where he slid up on the bank, he takes his feet and kind of pulls himself around. And then thereafter, he lays there for a while, well, for say 4, 5, 6 hours right in one location, which they do a lot of times, well, they'll mash the grass down, you know. And then he'll pick those spots to come out and take him a sunshine bath, you know, practically every day.
I didn't believe that alligator was alive. He hardly seemed to be able to move.
They can move fast. They're fast in the water. But they can't climb in. They can climb up working. It's pretty hard for them to climb over a log or anything. When they catch their prey out in the swamp where they are swimming in the water, when they catch anything that's any size, they just whirl with their tail, just whirl right over and over till they drown it. They just tear it all to pieces. Man don't stand no chance at all with it. In years past here, we've had a lot of alligator wrestling. We had a boy here, a man, and of course he'd wrestled these alligators. We had on a Sunday evening, we had one about 6 foot long that he was fixing to wrestle with it. And that alligator got his hand, and the alligator made one round with him, made one turn with him one time. But there was about 5 men standing right there, jumped right on that alligator. And the way they got his hand out of that alligator's mouth, they had to take a crowbar and prize his mouth with crowbars to get it big enough, open enough, that he could get his hand out of his mouth. He just ruined his hand. Taking about 56 stitches to sew the hand up.
He's a good eater. Well, he gets big and fat, then he loses it through the winter, you know. The alligators hibernate, then the bears, they'll get in the palmetto patch and lay around, you know, kind of lazy-like. Probably it warms up about 10 or 11 o'clock in the day. Then they start moving around.
They don't hibernate here at Bear Dome. It's not cold enough for them. He'd probably lie up for a day or two, a rough, cold day, getting a good, thick place somewhere left, but he rambles and hunts something to eat right on through the winter. World of the crane, sandhill crane. Of course, to the old timers that were here, that was known as the whooping crane. He hoops just like the other crane, just like the whooping crane. He has that hoop. But he's a different color. He's a brown, kind of brownish color. And the regular whooping crane is white. He's about the same size. Has the same holler and all like that, feeds just like the other. He's not he don't eat fish, he eats seeds and grass seeds and stuff like that, you know.
fellas, the sandhill crane, they start flying early in the morning. You can hear them holler for miles after they get up in the air. Well, raccoons, you find plenty of those here in the swamp. And you see one of those fellas most anywhere in the fish lakes around the edge. You know, they eat crawfish and frogs and eat baby alligators too once in a while like that. But generally, as a rule, the old coon will wash while he eats, you know. He likes to take it and stick it down in the water and rub his paws together, and he does a wonderful job. He sure does.
Mates in April. They start mating in April. And they start making their nest along in July, last July, and sometime along then. They start to break up sticks and mud and pile up a big bank. Sometime it'll be 3 foot high. And they build that nest where the sun can shine on it. At night, they crawl over that nest and get water, keep it wet with water crawling back into over it. And if it water dries away to where they can't crawl up there, they'll fill their old pouch full of it and blow it. Crawl up there and blow it on that nest and wet it. And she has to keep that wet so the sun, the steam, will raise a steam with this water in there that keeps that egg warm in the nest. That's the way they hatch. Then the last of August, the 1st of September, your little alligators is hatched out. And they're around about 5 inches long when they're hatched. And the mother alligator will stay with them. She takes them in the water and follows them right along. You probably may not see her most of the time, but she's still right there. After they get a year old, she'll begin to slip, ease off from them and leave them by themselves. And they'll begin to scatter out and into the swamp and start growing. They're mighty slow growing, but there ain't but about 5% of them that ever grows to maturity. The large bass in the swamp will eat them. Hawks will fly down and catch them on the water. Snakes will catch them and eat them. They have a hard time surviving.
There are a lot of people that's afraid to go in the swamp on account of the insects. We don't have so awfully many insects in there. We would have a lot more insects if it wasn't for some of the insect plants we have that live on insects in the swamp here.
And we have this flycatcher. We call them flycatchers. It's a pitcher plant. It's a real name for it. We have two types of them. And they will catch the flies and spiders and all kind of bugs. Sometimes you pull up one of them and split it open and it's plumb full up to the top.
The people who live in and around the Okefenokee are called swampers. What's new? Ask about the old days in the swamp, what life was like for the pioneer swampers.
When I was a boy growing up around the swamp back down in through here, we had a lot of young boys and young girls. Well, there was not too many of them, but we had enough that we could all get together and we'd have the old-fashioned frolics. It was the only amusement that we had. We had to make our own sports and things. I was a great hand to hunt. I loved it to hunt and fish. And of course, the old timers, we'd have the log rollings. With man wanted to clear his field, while we'd cut down all the timber off of the land and cut it up in big logs, and we'd take hand sticks and tote it off, pile it and burn it. Night come on, then we'd frolic all night. We'd start frolicking about dark, and we'd frolic right on till sunrise the next morning, and sometimes there'd be two nights of it. We'd work the second day, and next night we'd frolic again. About the biggest thing we had, though, was them old-time frolics and things like that. And the young people growed up, and we had little schools, old-fashioned schoolhouses, old log schools. I went to school many a day, and I had a little fife dog that followed me to school. I'd sit in the schoolhouse and watch my dog through the crack to see him running the rabbits around to the palmetto and ball bag. Of course, we had to wade. We didn't have any foot logs or anything. We had to wade the branches. No way of riding. We didn't have no... We had to walk it, you know. What little school that I went to, I walked 6 miles. Had to walk at night and morning. Of course, I didn't learn very much. I never did, when there was much to learn. I never did learn. Never did learn to read and write, but very little. I went about the third grade. Of course, a lot of the kids that growed up, I know some young girls that were raised right on the Cowhouse Island, and yet now it's in California. They never went to school nowhere except in a little old log school right on the island. There used to be a little school on Billy's Island. And they'd have these little schools about every 8-10 miles apart around the edge of this swamp. That's where the kids had to go to school. That's been about 40 years ago since that big still was operated. Been right about 40 years. Well, we've had a lot of that ever since I was big enough to know anything while we had moonshining. A man can make a living with it. He has to be mighty slick to do it, though. He has to be kind of about as cunning as these old bears around the swamp if he gets by with it. Now the man's out hunting him, you know. And they had a little seat made up in the top of this tree. That's where the guards sat. Most anybody could go in that fur, but they never did come out unless they was hauled out. Unless they knew who you was, that's the only way you got in. Now, if you know how to give them a signal in there, you get up pretty close, go to whistling like a quail whistles out here on the outside, and he'd know that somebody knowed him. He'd answer, and you go right on in and have no trouble.
And the little fella, they call that the moonshine possum. Of course, you can see him way up in a tree at night when the moon's shining real bright. That's where he gets his name, the moonshine. And the possums, in raising the young, well, sometimes the mother possum will raise anywhere from 5, 6, I have seen 6 and 7 along all at one time. And that's a sight that you wouldn't believe if you were to see it with your eyes, you know. Just see those little fellas hanging on, how they hang on that mother possum. And they get her so heavy that you can't hardly carry them after they grow up.
So you find subject to find any kind of a snake through the swamp altogether. Of course, your rattlers is mostly found around the islands. Now and then you'll find one way out in the swamp, with jungle parts of the swamp where it's like scrubby and bushes. I've found them where 3 miles to the island. I never saw a rattlesnake that could strike, I don't believe he could have struck 3 foot. About 2.5 foot, about his. And he can't strike too high up. A tall man like I am, I'd take about a 6 foot rattlesnake would strike me. He'd never hit me above the knee. It'd always be below the knee. A lot of people think they'll jump at you. They don't jump. He's got to be coiled. There's so much of him got to lay on the ground. No, he can't fly. He's about 2/3. Sometimes that they might get 2/3 of their length. So you can figure it. One tell about how long he is. You can tell just about how far he can strike when he's coiled up. Because there's about 1/3 of him that'll lay on the ground in that coil where he can hold himself to make the strike. I've heard a lot of people say they just jumped at me and see him jump, just jump his full length out, John. I never saw one do it. And I've watched them mighty close. Coral snakes are all on those islands in the swamp and all around the edges of the swamp. They're a beautiful snake, and they're near about a harmless snake. They can't bite you to harm you anyway unless he can get a hold of your finger and chew it or get you by the air, something like soft place, you know.
Well, you see, now the only poison water snake that we got in the swamp here is a cottonmouth water moccasin. And when he's real small, well, he looks just like a copperhead. Around the tip of his tail is green. And a lot of people get confused by the cottonmouth and think that little fella is a copperhead. But the bigger that he gets, the darker he gets. And he actually have a musk that you can smell after you get used to working with snakes and going out hunting them.
The swamp wasn't always that empty. 50 years ago, there was even a small town on one of the islands.
We had a town on Billy's Island. I've stayed on Billy's Island, and we had 800 people over there. We had two hotels over there, and we had one moving picture show, and we had two churches. No, it's all gone now. It's nothing but just Oak Island.
And there was a lot of folks there. They'd meet once a month at the old-fashioned church, the old hard-shell church. And they'd have that church there once a month. My grandmother lived on the side of this swamp, my grandmother Tatum, and it's about, I imagine, around 25 miles from where she lived to Blackshear over in Pierce County, and there was a hard shell church. The name of the church was Shiloh. And she'd walk it. She'd leave home on Friday and walk it all the way to Blackshear to church. And leave there Sunday night, Monday morning, and walk back home. She'd done that once a month. She was a religious old woman. If she hadn't been, she wouldn't have taken that long walk for that to go to that church. Of course, I never did join the church. I was always out in the swamp and among nature. I never did join the church till I was about 60 years old. I always felt closer out in the swamp. I felt closer to the good Lord out there than I did the man-made church house. I see a lot of people that didn't enjoy going to church, but I always got a kick out of nature. I love nature, and I could always see him more out in the woods and around where the stuff was growing than I could at the churches and places.
Then, all too soon, we pull back into the swamp park, the same place we'd left the day before for our What's New trip into the swamp.
Well, that's my whole life. That's practically all I ever think of, just about it, is a swamp. I was raised in the swamp, and I've always loved the swamp, and will long as I live. If I had my ruthers when I died, I'd rather be buried in the swamp than any other place I know of.
Okefenokee Swamp Part 2. That's the Okefenokee Swamp Part 2. I've been waiting for that for the longest time. And this is 16th of July, 1969, Wednesday, 16th of July, 1969, when the astronauts left for the moon. This is Okefenokee Swamp Part 2. This is Okefenokee Swamp Part 2. This is Channel 2 Right. This is Channel 2 Right. On the reel with Spoon River Anthology. This is Channel 2 Right. This is Channel 2 Right, around 300 on the reel that starts with Spoon River Anthology. Now, telephone fell that the program was on, and when we finished taping it, got my little tape recorder and took over there. I was going to play it for him in case he hadn't been able to get it, and then taped his comments. Now, he had heard it, and all I did was play a passage or two just to get him started every now and then. And it worked out just like that. I played a little bit, and then we talked a little bit, and I taped it. And this is it. And this is Channel 2 right around 300 now. Channel 2 right around 300. And that was Wednesday, the 16th of July, 69. Wednesday, the 16th of July, 69. The day the astronauts took off for the moon.
In there with, I estimated one time it would put five crops of boxes on. That's 10,500 boxes to a crop.
Yeah.
And they was enough there to put five crops on 1 hour a pine.
Oh, really?
Slash pine. Is very interested in that swamp. Now they love that swamp.
Yeah.
They sure do. And you know, it was a long time that there wasn't nobody down there when we went down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want us down there. But after we stayed there for a little while, why? And they hated to see us leave them mighty bad.
Yeah.
But we had quite a time staying there for a while.
Well, now, did you associate or work any of the swampers themselves?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked them peacocks and three of us, about as low a class of people in the world. I worked one of them Tatums, and I can't think of them now, folks, but I worked a good many of them.
Come out of those swamps to school. He had a little school there for the school cheer to go, and they came out of that swamp and never been to school, and they'd have on old coats. Long to me and then drag him around as a walk.
Oh.
And the sleeves was out like that.
Why, well, maybe?
And they'd come, you know, see his pitiful sight in your life.
Yeah.
And the teacher said they never had even been to Waycross. Some of those kids had. And did they come to Waycross or to Maine? Which was it they came? Waycross, wasn't it?
Yeah, they came up to Waycross one day.
And those kids, I'm telling you, you never seen them as proud.
They went for about 14, 15 of them that went to school there, and I loaned them my pickup truck to Camden, teacher to Camden Town.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was 21 miles.
You remember that, that
man that jumped in there on an alligator, and you know you would take your hands and hold the alligator's mouth together, but, open it.
Yeah.
It takes a snowball.
Yeah.
But you can take your hand and hold the alligator's mouth together. Now, I have done that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them there that wait for me to did to it and catch the alligator. And
just for the hell of it?
No, skin him. They get they used to then, they got $1 a foot for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about $8-$10 a foot now. And you know, when we was down there, a coon hide was just the same as a dollar bill.
Yeah.
They come in there in the commissary and wanted something other, and they have a coon hide, you know.
Oh.
I didn't know nothing about no coon hide. And I asked the mayor of
Waycross,
he had a hide company there that bought hides, all kinds of hides. And I asked him what the name was.
Monroe.
I asked him, I said, what am I going to do with these here hides I've got down there? He says, give him a dollar piece for him. Said, bring him on up here. So I don't care what kind of hide he has. And I'd give you $1 piece for them. Sometime we'd carry as many as 100 hides up there.
Oh.
good Lord. On a board. No, they've been cured.
And that's what they paid. There was a man down there that delivered babies.
Yeah. What was his name?
I don't know, and they give him so many coon hides.
15 coon hides.
15 coon hides.
And he waited on his
now that sounds like a fairy tale, but it didn't.
He waited on his wife when she had a baby for 15 coon hides.
Yeah.
And he damn sure better start saving coon hides.
Got sense for that.
What were the better class people? How were they?
Well, they had a little bit more, and
some of them were principal.
They wouldn't. In other words, they're pretty good neighborly people.
Yeah.
The other people down there, it wasn't exactly like that.
Yeah. Well, who done the moonshining?
Oh, boy. That was all of them.
They had to wear a sign to keep selling it to each other.
What's that, Raven?
I said they had to wear a sign on them to keep them selling it to each other.
You know, that's the only place I ever seen anybody run a business without a payday.
Yeah.
We couldn't have a payday there and pay off on Saturday or payday or nothing like that. We didn't have any payday. The man get pay every night if he wanted.
Yeah.
Oh.
But we never didn't have no payday. People. Oh, boy, I've seen 50 people there drunk, shooting, raising sand.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I
never know. I don't think anybody ever was killed there.
Yeah.
But several of them were shot.
Yeah.
And
they all carried knives.
Well, didn't the sheriff tell you that you would... Well, nothing they could do with those people down there. You'd have to run the mill the best you could. They could, they wouldn't have it. When they run all out of a nigger away from there, so the nigger couldn't work at that mill.
Yeah.
And they ran every one of them away.
Yeah. But they come back.
No, the sheriff told them. Bill went up there and talked to the sheriff. The niggers come up there and we put them in there where we were staying at and guarded them the rest of the night.
Yeah.
And Bill went to see the sheriff, and the sheriff told him, he says, I'll let you have guns, but no, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
So I went to our other mill out from Brundrett and picked up all the white men, brought them up there and went through Waycross.
Yeah.
And they had guns, and I got ammunition enough to take care of it. And when we unloaded that car out there, they sent the daughter up there to the house, you know, and she saw all those guns and that ammunition. We didn't have no trouble.
Yeah.
Because they knew we meant business.
But you kept the niggers?
Oh, yeah, the niggers stayed with us. Those niggers, part of them had been raised at our mill.
You couldn't operate without them?
We couldn't operate without them.
Yeah.
And Bell had them. They had a water tank down there. Bell had those men up in water tanks and all around. And they would give orders to shoot the first one that come up there. Them niggas. He put them right back in the shanties that they was in. And the men, white men, stood guard over them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two men. They were every night with 30-30 Springfield rifles.
Yeah.
But, We didn't ever shoot one of them. Never did. They didn't ever know that they was on guard. It's the same way in the swamp. We had to keep a man out there.
Yeah.
For I reckon that went on for about 6-8 months.
Oh, that long?
But after then, it was all right.
Yeah.
They thought a lot of us. We didn't care if they caught them coons out of season or made liquor.
Yeah.
That wasn't our business. We didn't mess with that.
You know what, I didn't feel it either, but they say that those people down there, when one would die and all like that, they would take a hollow log and clean it out and put them in it and carry them out of the alley or boxcar and just nail something over the each end of the hollow log, and that was what they were burying.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't see that. That's what they told us.
We went across this island where this old man lived, and if I'm not mistaken, they told me that the law, in other words, forced that old man to move out of that place so he could send his children to school. That they forced him to move out of there.
Yeah.
And I've heard him tell about one of his children dying in that swamp. However, you don't have malaria in that swamp. If it did, it was like any other swamp. And all white. There wouldn't be nobody there, but it'd be dead with malaria. But you didn't care the water out there to drink. You scratched out a hole in the mud and throwed it out. It got to be a light yellow and then drank all you want. It was cool, good water.
Good water.
Now, an old man that was raised there, old man Hamp Marcel, he said it was the iron in the swamp that what protected that malaria.
Yeah, that was the funniest old man you've ever seen. Hemp,
Moselle?
Had nose, and anything made a little fuss around there, he wouldn't have a rooster and nothing else on the plate. And a wife would be making biscuits, and if she made a little fuss for that biscuit tray, he'd grab it up and run out the door with the biscuit tray and set it down in the middle of the yard.
Yeah.
And let the chickens eat it.
Yeah.
But now he was one nose.
Oh, he's nervous.
Nervous, but he lived right back there in those swamps. The water was all around here, his place. You could go up to the front, but on each side, the water was around his place.
There on his place, he's got a big lake there. A lot of people went down there fishing, you know.
Yeah.
And I read about the center of that lake down there, the distance out, off about 60, 75 feet from the edge of that lake. There's a cypress tree there. The best I could measure it up about waist high, you know, where you would cut it, was 8 foot and 4 inches across it. Stump. That's a big cypress. It's a beautiful tree.
Yeah.
Tell him what he told you, had a big, little skeletons of men that he got out of that.
Oh, he's got a whole, he got a pile of bone. And, he showed you some that he said was leg bones, you know, and he placed them apart that the first people that was in that swamp were 7-8 foot high.
Goodness.
Well, I don't know. They all tell that story, you know. But
yeah.
Tell anybody that goes down there that don't know anything about it, about those folks coming out of the swamp, you know, and killing folks and all like that. But the last big buzzard that was up there, that didn't hold up.
Mm-hmm.
That's been since we've been living in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
They killed one fella and said it. And they might have got away with it if they'd kept their mouth shut, but they talked too much.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that them kind of people do, you know.
Do they?
Yeah, if you want to know anything, just don't say anything to them. They'll eventually tell you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Another thing that's one of the most peculiar things you ever seen. You can go on any of them's barn.
Yeah.
You'll sure be there.
Yeah.
I've
got you. I've been on a dozen or more of them spawned.
Yeah.
Making liquor, stealing hogs or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And, but you needn't worry about it. He's going to be at court.
Yeah. Well, he just figured the hog was out there.
Well.
Yeah.
They wasn't that honest. Just so they saw the hog, they got him if they wanted him.
Yeah. But it, no great problem to them. They they still make the bond and live up to it.
But you know, I was in one island over there. I think they called it Honey Island. I believe it's what they called it. That's down on the on this side of the swamp, on the west side. And I went in there looking at timber, and the island was about a mile wide and about 3 miles long.
Oh.
And it was solid in blueberries, I guess about 3 foot tall. And boy, they would have drove a bear in there.
Oh.
And, you know, they chipped those pines.
Yeah.
And some of them was chipped up about as high as I could reach.
Yeah.
They gnawed that off, you know, to rub that tub tine, that gum on the head, you know, to keep the flies off.
Yeah.
And there was plenty of them there.
Yeah.
We seen two going off in the swamp, but that's all. But you could tell that they must have been a drove of them there. And I'd have made a whole lot more money if I'd have shut my mill down and have cared all my people over there and put the picking blueberries at 40 cents a quart.
Yeah.
Than I was cutting the best cypress lumber for $25, $30 a thousand.
Oh, guy, something else you reckon you'll get a kick out of. Mr. Moore from Waycross carried the mail down there, and he had carried the mail, oh, I reckon 50 years when he retired. And he carried mail down there whenever he even had an old buggy. And but he had a car when we knew him, and we knew his children, and they said that their daddy would go down there, and all these old people, you know, would come up and bring something for him to sell, blueberries or blackberries, or anything they had gathered, they'd give it to him, and ask him to sell it for them, and bring them so much cloth or whatever they wanted. And his children, one of them was a little, his daughter. She was, I said, when she was courting, so going with a boy that she married, said that people in Waycross, most of them thought that they peddled for a living because they said that didn't make them go out and, from door to door and sell that stuff for those people down there. So, and then his brother, their mother, would go uptown to buy whatever they wanted and send it back to them.
Yeah.
And said that, well, just before she got married, this boy had to go with her.
Yeah.
You know that she married, going around trying to sell stuff to those people that sent up there. But there ain't many people to fool folks like that, would he?
No.
But his name was Mr. Moore.
Well, you know, you know that, Fred was talking about Mr. Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And from what he says about him, you know, he kind of the last of the fellas that lived off their own, what they grew. He went into town, he carried his corn, and they got his meal. And he killed his meat and saved it and peddled it and all like that. Now,
he set a good table, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Didn't it fair? You ate with them one time, and they had plenty of food. They weren't even looking for them.
Yeah. Well, now, that's what these... now, Who do you call the swampers? Just the people that live over there? Now, they may not be...
They live right around that swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know Swan River came out of that swamp?
Mm.
Billy's Island?
Billy's Lake.
Billy's Lake is where Swan River came from. I didn't know that till
tonight. That's why they even said they had a picture show and
800 people, they said, did live there.
At the head of Swanee River there, mm-hmm. at Billy's Island.
Yeah, that's the head of Swanee River, Billy's Lake.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty lake.
Yeah.
Pretty lake. Fishing from the Fargo side.
Yeah.
Going there, it's only about 12 miles, I think.
How far is that from Jacksonville?
And turns west, 60 miles.
Well, that's where they went in the swamp from Waycross.
Crossed it.
Yeah.
At 60 miles long.
Well, where is Blackshear from there?
Blackshear is about 15 miles
north.
North, or a little bit northeast.
Uh-huh. It's on the road that goes from Waycross to Jessup.
Yes.
And Jessup's Savannah.
It's a little bit northeast from that swamp.
Well, now that's where Liza and them come
mm-hmm.
from. Blackshear.
The Hawkins were some of our folks that was there. Liza knew him.
Oh, really?
He was a doctor there. He died.
Oh.
Oh, me and Abraham was racing along there and said that the green lights, you know, when it changed red, he just went on across.
Yeah.
And they stopped him. And then they asked him what did he mean running a green light. He said, well, Mr. says, I thought that that was the green light was for white folks and red is for niggers.
Well, the canal.
They did what?
Spent $1 million digging a canal through that swamp. And found out that it would turn the Gulf of Mexico back into the swamp, and they only got about 25 miles. I've never been right to the end of it, but I've been very near to the end of it. It's a pretty good sized canal. I guess it's about 40, 50 feet wide.
Yeah.
And it was about 10, 12 foot deep.
Yeah.
I went down it, and I was scared of to carry one motor. I carried two. And then I had to paddle about a mile back out that thing. I just never could get them things to run for me.
Oh, really?
That's right. But that was some of the prettiest pine timber on this island. They called it Boogie Boo Island.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these cross-tie people in there snake those ties out with steers.
Oh.
And I guess that's one of them got a loose, but he went in there and he was on that island.
Did we
that
ever show
the
you the
only
pictures?
Thing that was I seen on there was this steer.
Oh.
But that was some beautiful timber.
Yeah. Well, he get along fine over there by himself, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Did he show you the pictures of his train, his railroad, and all in there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like
but
to see.
We left that locomotive there. I don't know what went with it.
Good Lord.
It had enough brace in it to borrow a good deal of money.
Yeah.
But we left it there and had no time to buy it.
Couldn't do anything with it.
Well, we didn't need it, so that's too big of something to haul, just to haul around with.
Yeah. Phil, you know, let me tell you what I've
been here 30 years. Soon we'll be. And that's the first time this last year that the lights was off that long, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But when we first moved to Larry, there was a fellow there that run a garage, And he put in a light plant there to furnish all the stores there. I reckon maybe there was somewhat about a dozen stores downtown this place. And he furnished lights for them and the filling stations and places like that.
Yeah.
He had a pretty good sized light plant. I've seen it set back there in his garage.
Uh-huh.
Well, Flo Richardson said that there was a long time, you know, that they before they could get lights in Evanston, and old man Richardson had his own plant.
Yeah.
And so they wanted $2,600 to bring those lights from Boardman Road up to their house.
Yeah. Well, in those days, you had to have money.
Nothing from when we moved down here. Yeah, I had bought a washing machine, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And they bought them after we came here.
Oh, really?
Had lights that used batteries, a big bunch of batteries.
Well, man, yeah. Lord Smith had that kind of light.
Well, at least you got one.
I say, when they get up on that moon,
you got
and hit it, you know, tell it what's going off down here.
You got one 4-inch well, haven't you?
I believe so.
Have you got a jet pump on that?
No.
Got a submerged pump?
No. Oh, just a jet.
You got a jet pump on
both
of them?
Yeah, a little half-inch one, half horse.
Yeah. 4-inch.
That's all.
Must not be very deep to the water.
It's both of them by light.
I said, Tatum, you need to get this.
All right.
If that's the Tatum that bolt cross ties for old man Jim Strickland, he's the damnedest liar in this country. that he was, and it must be him too, because from his looks, he looked to be about that old when I knowed him.
Yeah.
He was somewhere around 26, 27 years old.
Yeah.
And he looks to be now around 58 or 60 or something like that, and. That must be the one. I can't think of his given name. But he bolt cross ties from them people down there. He knowed them a little bit better than old man Strickland, you know, and he bolt cross ties for him already for 3-4 years. And but he was the damnest liar you ever heard.
He'd telling things like this?
Oh, he'd tell anything. It didn't make no difference what it was. He'd tell anything.
About this wrestling? Alligator wrestling?
Yeah. And, when he told that, I said, that must be Ed Tatum.
Ed Tatum.
I said, that must be old Ed Tatum. He's the biggest liar you ever seen in your life.
But he knew the people pretty well.
Oh, he knew them.
So he went out and traded for the cross ties.
He cut them and brought them in.
No, he just went out and bought them. And for them people that did.
He did cut them. I thought maybe he shoot them himself.
Now, a lot of those people down there that old man Jim Strickland didn't get along with, you know. He couldn't get along with them. Ed Tatum could.
Mm-hmm.
When we was living there, we crossed old man Jim Strickland when he's talking about, now you need to take this to see. But anyway, the old man had a bad foot.
Yeah.
And he used to be an inspector for the Coastline Railroad. And this foot, he didn't have but one of his legs was off, and he had just the one foot. And he got a sore right on the, you know, instep of his foot. And he got blood poisoning, and it run the old man just as bad as he could. And for a year, he didn't know nothing hardly.
Oh.
You know, nobody, nothing else. Didn't remember anything. And Phil'd go around there and, you know, see the old man, and I would go there. Mighty good friend of ours, mm-hmm. I think. And Phil walked in one day, and whenever it did, old man Jim was laying across the bed. And he raised up and he looked. He says, "Phil," says, "where's my broad at?" So I lent it to you and said, "You haven't brought it back." And Phil had his broad axe, and that's the first thing that old man had remembered in over a year.
Yes.
And his family laughed till I'm telling you they cried. They were so tickled.
So proud of
so
it.
So I reckon he kept his right mind then until he died. Little bitty old man. But he
was a mean
son.
He was,
They had a beautiful home there, and all of his children might yet, you know, boarded there. They was married. And I expect they had about 15 or 20 rooms home there.
Well, how'd he get?
All boarded. He was man strictly and made money.
Oh, trading.
And
buying.
But now, whenever
everything.
He was this coastline inspector, he made money there.
Mm-hmm.
And then this cross tie business, he made money on that too.
Yeah.
He's
just... Oh, I helped the old man a lot myself.
Work for him?
I never did get paid for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just helping him. But I've been out there unloading cross ties at 11 o'clock Saturday night. Helping that old man out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But he had one of
his... Well, he made some money then, didn't he?
Oh, he made good money,
Were he mean?
He was hard to get along with. He was in the car with me one day and came on me to carry my town. And it passed along, the man was leading a dog, a little bitty fast dog like that, and had on these when they wore knickers.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Good morning, son." He didn't know that man the one I did. I says, "Well, your son grows to be pretty old." He says, "I didn't say what kind of son he was."
Just full of vinegar.
A little bitty man. And boy, he... Things after he lost his mind, he is telling all these things that Phil and I knew he had done. About getting drunk, you know, and all such things as that. And he just telling it. Telling me about it, and his wife, I said, "Don't pay that no attention." She says, "Don't pay that no attention." She says, "Not a word of it, so." Get me off. I thought to myself, "Every word of it, so." And you don't know it, but I do.
Where was that? We went one night to straighten his book out. He'd been drunk.
Honey, and we went.
What
in Donisonville? No, it was. We were living at Damascus.
Wasn't it Dothan, Alabama?
No, I don't think it was there, honey, but it was way back out of this Donaldsonville.
I know it taken us all night.
Close to Bainbridge or somewhere.
And we were...
We was midnight getting there, and you fixed his books and went and mailed it on the train, the letter.
There was a bunch of people over there. It wasn't much trouble to get the old man drunk. And they had checked up his, made a check into some lumber that he'd taken up and fixed it where they would fire the old man just as soon as they got him. And I found it out, and it was 75, 80 miles. And hit dark and drizzling rain and cold as a dickens. And we was in an open car.
No, honey, we had that Hudson and it was brand new.
Was that what we were driving?
Yeah, that's what we were driving.
Well, it was a bad night. I ain't joking with you. I went to the hotel, went to his room, and he got up and crawled to the door with his one leg and opened the door, and I went in. And I'd taken this tally sheet and fixed it and got it all up and mailed it. That night to hold that old man's job.
Now, how would that hold his job?
This lumber that he bought
in other words, there wasn't half of it there.
Coastline Railroad.
This,
and if they give you an order, they'd have to pay.
This tally sheet he had was 15,000-20,000 feet of board when there's only about 7,000-8,000 feet.
Well, did he get up the rest of it, or how did it work out?
No, we just sent in the right amount and told the other one up.
But he stopped working for the railroad. Then he went to buy his cross ties. And those people in Okanoga Swamp would cut them. And he had this fella Tatum buying them, you know, for him. And they were
holding
them up there to this sidetrack.
Yeah. And that's where he made his money.
He made money there. And I come by, I lived in Prontree. And they did fire him. The railroad fired him. And you remember when they used to have these stones out in front of the house to get the buggy? He was sitting out there on one of them things when I come by there, just stopped to see him. And the old man was sitting there crying. Everybody lost his job and all that kind. I told him, I said, Uncle Jim, I said, don't worry about that. I said, right there's a sidetrack, right by your house. And I says, buy cross ties, one or carload or 50, any amount that they bring up here. I said, you buy them and pay them for me. He said, I ain't got no money. I says, I ain't got much. But I says, I'll buy what I got. Well, it was, it was in 1930. And I says, I ain't got much, but I'll divide with you. And he says, I got a life insurance policy. He says, I'll see how much I can get on that. And he borrowed a little money on that. I told him, I says, Uncle Jim, I says, you own the thing on this here house.
Now, we did talk over at Fell's last night. I'll have to continue this. Session with Fell after the second part of the Okefenokee Swamp on Wednesday the 16th of July, 1969. I'll continue this on Channel 2 over. On Channel 2 over. I'll continue this on Channel 2 over.